Blog Talk Radio.
Divine, all blessed, peace and love, joy and prosperity. You are now listening live to the Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Hoodoo Obeya Bokor, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, evolutionary, revolutionary, healing, and holistic. from a Pan-African hoodoo world spiritualist perspective, understanding that all is indeed a blessing. If you can just see beyond the veils, for it is all just an illusion and a test, one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, my reverberation, reiteration, and my ever-living reality. It is crucial to the very foundation of my being, my belief, my teaching, my walk, and my work along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. It is how I, the Divine Prince, live, breathe, find my demonstration here among you as we battle forward daily along this earth path. Whether comes and goes. Hard times come and go. Negatives come and go. But we must be true. We must be pure. We must be authentic. We must be present in the moment as we battle forward. We are picking up right where we left off, the evolution, if you will, in voodoo, in the new world, with revolution, particularly New Orleans, particularly Haiti. We can play with the semantics. How do you spell it? You know, is it old? Is it used? You know, but it's all voodoo. I'm in constant communication, daily communication with people in West Africa, brothers and sisters who practice voodoo, who are in the community of voodoo, who are in the art, science, lineage, history of voodoo, and it's all voodoo to them. The labels, the subtitles, the playing around with the word usage only becomes important when we get into organized religion. And within the confines of voodoo, I'm talking Ifa, Lokomi, Santeria, Candomblé, very location-specific practices of voodoo. But I give credit to, and have done so, particularly in the most recent shows, to particularly Dominican and 21 Divisions and Puerto Rican voodoo for having a similar structure of organization to that which manifests here in Louisiana voodoo, and particularly the integration of Native American spirits, Indian spirits, the usage of international spirits, which we clarified in yesterday's show, is not specific to us. You can see Hindu amalgamation in West Africa. You can even see Islamic amalgamation in modern times, as well as in ancient documentation. There are very specific paths in Haitian voodoo that can be linked back to the Middle Passage, but also to the Islamic involvement in slavery, and their presence is still felt, is still manifest, if you know where to look, in certain aspects of traditional Haitian voodoo, for whatever reason, mute when you get to this side of the Gulf. And we know why. The U.S., the American South, we also have the legacy of racism. We also have the legacy of Jim Crow, Black Law, all the oppressive systems, many which continue to have ghosts that haunt us today. So our practice was forced underground in a very unnatural way. That did not happen in Cuba. That did not happen in Puerto Rico, that Brazil, if you will. There was land there where people could separate themselves, isolate themselves. Now, we would be remiss to not talk about maroon colonies, and particularly maroon colonies here in Louisiana. There were quite a few of them, and the introduction of revolutionary rebel spirits into Louisiana and New Orleans voodoo. One right off the top of my head is St. Milo, Jean St. Milo, who was a maroon captain, if you will, who fled to the swamps, the bayous of Louisiana, where there were hundreds, if not more, who's to say who had the real count, of escaped people of all chocolate and brown ethnicities, because you would find Filipino, you would find Hispanic mixes, you would find your Spanish Creole, you would find your French Creole. And there was an extensive Asian population here also at the time. So much so that I'm going to do a separate show just on the Asian influence. My root is in Louisiana, Bogalusa, Louisiana, but more specifically, Mississippi, Louise, Mississippi. After my people left Louisiana, just as Bogalusa was becoming an incorporated city, I believe that was around the turn of the 1800s, I believe. They moved deeper into the Delta, into Mississippi, into what is now Yazoo County. And even there, there are community stores that have been there as long as the Black people have been there that are Asian owned. We often think of that as being a modern phenomenon, particularly those from the North, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago. We see that often, and we often see that as a newcomer issue, as someone new coming in and doing, but there is a history of many of these ethnicities being here since the very beginning and having a presence in our communities. And you can particularly find that in the rural areas of Mississippi and Louisiana. But the presence of spirits like San Milo was a human maroon who was hung, executed for being a maroon, for having helped other slaves escape, for having supposedly killed people in revolution, excuse me, in the act of revolution, and was hung in what is now a very popular area of the city, Jackson Square, in the French Quarter, right there where the tarot card readers are, right there where St. Louis Cathedral is. So his spirit became one of the revolutionary spirits in voodoo that is specific to New Orleans, that is specific to Louisiana. Black Hawk is another revolutionary, rebel, human spirit who had a reputation for rebellion, who had a reputation for fighting the system while they were living, who were then elevated, deified. I think the Catholics would make someone a saint. Cannot overlook that connection in the amalgamation process, in the developmental process of the localized practice that is Louisiana and New Orleans specific voodoo. Now, from there, it's very easy to understand the history, the root, the branch that became hoodoo. Again, as the practice traveled upriver, up the Mississippi River, which was the superhighway of the country, so too did the practice, and that was the foundation for the Black spiritualist churches, but also the foundation for the continuation of voodoo, New Orleans voodoo,
voodoo, Louisiana voodoo, to survive, but to begin to amalgamate, to begin to evolve, to begin to take on very different characteristics of as it encountered new challenges, new people, and new locations. Often the attempt to segregate, segment, particularly now in modern times, is for commercialism. It's for the dollar. It's for capitalism, primarily. But at the end of the day, if you're operating in an organized system, let me be specific. You know, what you see happening is the practice evolves, the usage evolves, and so the people therefore begin to assume some alteration in terms of protocol. And at some level, there would be some natural progression of change as it relates to protocol. But there's still rules. There's still some order. There's still some sense of integrity. We're dealing in an environment now where everybody is a practitioner. Everyone is a expert. Everyone is a titled person, if we are to believe how people would present themselves. The basic foundation of the tradition, going all the way back to West Africa, has primarily been some very specific things. Ancestral worship, and often people will not talk about ancestral worship, will not get into ancestral worship. You're not seeing a lot of these forums, a lot of these talk shows, a lot of these blogs about that, because it's difficult to talk about that and then also exclude ethnicity, exclude race. And there's a whole conversation there that is happening behind closed doors, but needs to happen right out on the table as it relates to ethnicity. Many of these traditions are ethnic specific, thereby being race specific, thereby being root specific. The attempt to amalgamate to a point of universalism is a very Western notion. You know, we can Christianize the world regardless of who they are, whatever their race is, whatever their ethnicity is, whatever their culture is. We'll trample on that and brush them with this white paint and we'll make them Christian. And to some degree, we see a very similar practice. I often say Christianity and Islam, two different sides of the same coin, a universalism that needs to crush cultures, that needs to crush ethnicities, that needs to crush history, that needs to destroy the ancient Palmyra. I believe Palmyra, ancient Palmyra, was destroyed in the last 48 hours, I believe, by an ISIS group. So there's a need there to crush and destroy other traditions, other practices, that's recognizable, even when it's not being given voice, even when it's not, you know, being given an outright, honest demonstration, even when it's hidden, even when it's subtle. That vibration, that presence can be felt, can be seen, can be perceived. And it's a presence that's never been a part of voodoo, that's never been a part of our ancestral warring and the ethnic fighting among African is a very separate issue. Now, the overcoming of another tribe, another group, and swallowing up their traditions, swallowing up their gods and goddesses, I do believe to some degree that we can trace some practice of that. The quickest direction to that is the Yoruba. We see that everywhere, almost in a very universal form. When we speak of these organized religions, when we speak of voodoo, we often are using the language of the Yoruba. When you say Ashe, you're using the language of the Yoruba. When we talk about Orisha, we're using the language of the Yoruba. It has been universalized, but there's our ethnic root to the practice, to the tradition, to these gods, to these deities. We also find some universalism, if you will, as it relates to Iwe, though it's less understood as Yoruba. Yoruba has been more romanticized, more popularized. But Iwe, we also find many patterns that suggest much of what we accredited to the Yoruba can be also accredited to the Iwe. So everyone wants to claim ownership of the power, of the tradition, of the practice. And that habit did not lessen in the New World. So we see that in Lokomi, we see that in Kandabwe, we see that in Haitian voodoo, a very possessiveness about the power, about Ashe, about the tradition, about who is stronger and what is stronger and what is more powerful. And I dare say the power of ancestor is more powerful than anything, but the power of revolution is high on the list in terms of power. So we often will look to Haiti and then New Orleans when it comes to result-oriented practice, when it comes to battling, when it comes to some of the darker traditions, unfortunately. And these traditions are used to both demonize, politicize, paint with a broad brush the traditions, but also to misinform and to instill fear and control. Beyond ancestral worship, there is dancing, drumming, communion with spirits. There is sacrifice and offering. There is how priestesses are made and interpreted within the culture, and then possession within the culture. We know that New Orleans' evolution in voodoo was the female priestess, the mambo, the queen, the voodoo queen. In Haitian voodoo, you have mambo, you have the Asagwe mambo, your higher ranking, but there's still an understanding, even unspoken, that your power is second to the Hogan in Haitian voodoo. Whereas in New Orleans voodoo, akin to West African voodoo, the woman holds the power. The queen holds the power and passes down that power. That is an evolution of a practice specific to New Orleans. Another evolution of the practice specific to New Orleans is possession and participants in ritual possession. It is ceremonial in Haitian voodoo. It has gone underground and it has been individualized in New Orleans voodoo and practice. Indeed, the need for communal practice has been under attack in the New World in general, not just in New Orleans, but in America. You'll see some that segregation as it manifests in the church on Sunday mornings. So there's still that racial context that will be discussed, and we're going to give a whole show to that. If I digress too far off into that right now, I'll lose track of where I am in the process in telling my story here. But we will talk about that, especially as we get into the 20th century, 21st century, civil rights, the Underground Railroad, the Black spiritualist churches, and then the new manifestation, I believe, of the spiritualist church, which is the Prosperity Ministry. And now they will talk Christian, But if you know what you're hearing, if you know what you're listening to, you also are hearing a ritual, magical element. I know many of these practitioners, participants in the spiritualist, in the prosperity ministry who are familiar with, they speak in tongues, they believe in Jesus, but they're still doing their ritual. They still know who Shango is. They still know who Oshun is. They still know who the seven African powers are. So there are several other branches to cover if I digress too far off in that direction, and I am definitely losing time in today's show. I got about 3 minutes left here. So there was a time that the practice was more communal, when we lived more communally. But as we grew beyond, evolved beyond, as the years away from enslavement, away from freedom, so to speak, away from Jim Crow increased, so too did our attitude and our usage of these practices evolve, change. We will also have to then begin to look at the popularity of these practices in Western culture and that effect on the tradition. There was a time white people and people from other communities, other ethnicities, other parts of the world would not have been openly acknowledging these traditions. We can easily point back to Marie Laveau even. I would say that that was the beginning of a time in popularity, in pop culture, in common knowledge, where whites, non-blacks, non-Haitians, non-Africans, non-blacks were accessing voodoo to some degree in a way where it was acknowledged or can be seen or traced back publicly. Prior to that, it was all downhill. It was all a negative. There was no acknowledgement of, and if we were to acknowledge it, to be caught doing it, to have some link to it, we could have been killed, we could have been lynched. But as you move forward in time, move forward in history, we will also have to account to that access to these traditions. We could have the same conversation about that access to other traditions here locally, baby dolls, skull and bones, and so on and so forth. And that, too, is a continuation, another branch in the story that is New Orleans Voodoo. We will also have to talk about that effect on the continued evolution of the practice of the tradition and where it's going. I've completely run out of time. I will soon be going back to my two-hour format. Just allow us to complete this season of Roots. Let me find out where I am in all of that, in terms of scheduling, and then I will at some point make my announcement that I'm going back to my two-hour format. But I will be present tomorrow at high noon U.S. Central Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio, bringing you more hoodoo, New Orleans voodoo secrets and recipes with the Divine Prince. You can access me 24 hours a day, always at my website, www.houseofthedivineprince.com. You can also connect with me everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, Yelp, LinkedIn, everywhere, Clout, Scoop It, everywhere, just not Facebook. I am anti-Facebook. Everywhere, just not Facebook. Until tomorrow at high noon, U.S. Central Standard Time, remember,